Do you solemnly swear that you will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that you will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that you would take this obligation freely, without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that you will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which you are about to enter, so help you God. Congratulations, you're now members of the 114th Congress.
Mr. Attorney General, will you agree to come before the Oversight Committee without the need for a subpoena in the January timeframe? I will not. Mr. Attorney General, will you agree to come before the committee I chair, the Oversight Committee, the one you produced these documents to, in the January timeframe without the need for a subpoena?
I will consider it, but I will note I've testified on four occasions with regard to this matter. I've appeared before you at least on two occasions.
You've appeared before this committee. Your organization pushed back on the request for a joint hearing here today. Not will you consider it, but do I need to serve a subpoena on yourself and Lanny Brewer and the other people under direct investigation of my committee, or will you agree to come voluntarily in the January timeframe before the committee?
I will consider any request that you make.
I thank you, Mr. Attorney General. I now would go to the questions of emails. This is the documents you refer to. Most of these documents, 5,000 or so, are in fact emails. Mr. Attorney General, I have a question for you. Not one of these emails, in fact, is yours. Aren't you a prolific emailer?
No.
Don't you email?
Yes.
Do you have a personal email account and as well as an Attorney General's email account?
I have an email account at the Justice Department, yes.
Do you have a personal email?
Yes.
Do you regularly email to Lanny Brewer, your former partner, and your head of criminal division?
No, I wouldn't say regularly. There are only a limited number of people who know my email address in the Justice Department.
Let me cut to the chase. Don't you think it's a little conspicuous in his absence that there's not one email to or from you related to Fast and Furious in any way, shape, or form?
There are a variety of reasons why the emails that we have shared with you are there. We have shared in an unprecedented way email information that no Justice Department, no Attorney General has ever authorized before. You have deliberative information contained, I guess.
But isn't it true that executive privilege does not flow to the Attorney General, only to the office of the President? So deliberative process within your department running law enforcement, in fact, doesn't serve executive privilege. As the chairman said going on, you haven't cited any reason that these would not have been delivered.
In making production determinations, we have followed what attorneys general in the past have always used as applicable standards, and these are Republican as well as Democratic attorneys general, and the information that we have provided to you has been responsive, has been, I think, fulsome, and also has been unprecedented.
Well, unprecedented would be an attorney general who knew nothing about something where his own DAG, now his present chief of staff, was intimately familiar. Gary Grindler was well aware, according to documents provided, of Fast and Furious on March 12, 2010. Are you aware of that, that he was aware of Fast and Furious and what its procedures were on March of 2010?
It was certainly brought to his attention as part of a regular briefing that he got from ATF, but he did not hear during that briefing anything about the tactics.
Really? Why in his own handwriting, when he talks about going to stash houses, he clearly understood in a document you've delivered, he clearly understood in his own handwriting what the tactic was. But I'm going to ask you a different question.
Ladies and gentlemen of America, welcome to AJC Radio, and it is Spotlight on Capitol Hill, where tonight we shine the spotlight on Congressman Daryl Issa. And I'll tell you right now, what you just heard is not a fairy tale. It's not something that is from a movie. But I'll tell you right now, look out. Congressman Issa is taking no prisoners, and he's holding folks accountable. Hang on to your seat, folks, as we ascend upon our nation's capital here at AJC Radio, Spotlight on Capitol Hill. Hang on. And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Lamont Banks, along with Lisa Stewart, Cliff Stewart, and William Williams. And tonight, we address a legend, I believe, someone who is not afraid to ask the tough questions and seek for the answers that we're seeking here, that he was seeking, in hearings, Cliff, and William and Lisa. I tell you what, that's no nonsense to me. Your thoughts on that, Lisa?
Yeah, he sounds like a no-nonsense kind of guy right there, most definitely. He sounds like he's going at him, and he's going to get to the bottom of it no matter what anybody says. He was really going at him right there.
Well, the issue is that we've gone long enough in this country where we don't hold these government administrations accountable. They have to be held accountable, and that doesn't matter on what side of the aisle you may be on, whether you're Democrat, Republic, Independent, whatever you want to call it. Accountability, and we've been talking about this for quite some time. The failure to hold folks accountability gives people the God complex, that they can do whatever they want to do, that nothing matters, and they're not answerable for their actions. You're going to learn tonight on this program that Congressman Issa is one that has set precedent on Capitol Hill, a person that says this is the way it is, and this is what has to be done. And folks, you want to hang on in there with us. This is going to be a good one. And Lisa, read our disclaimer, please.
Yes, we just want to remind everyone that we are not attorneys and that A Just Cause does not provide any legal advice. You want to contact your personal legal advisor for all of your legal needs. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests do not necessarily reflect that of A Just Cause or AJC Radio. And as always, we want to thank you for tuning in and choosing to spend a little bit of your evening with us.
And thank you for that, Lisa. We appreciate that. And folks, like we said, tonight, spotlight on Capitol Hill. Good things happening in our nation's capital. Our congressmen, our elected officials are doing some things that make a difference. And that's where this all boils down to. And we're going to get into the life of Congressman Issa. And I'll tell you what, there's a lot involved, William, as we have been talking earlier, a lot involved with this man. We said it before, this is something that is a street term. Whether you're talking smack about the basketball court or the football field, taking no prisoners. And I'll tell you what, he's calling names on this one, isn't he?
Sure is. He's definitely calling names. I tell you, listening to that clip, it made you kind of cringe. It was like a boxing match. He was throwing punches, and they were landing. So,
well, look, here's the bottom line, ladies and gentlemen of America. The bottom line is that this is something that has to be dealt with. And again, this is what makes Congress Congress, and that is this. You are going to not always agree. That's the bottom line. And that's why you have two parties. But apparently some things get done in our country with two separate parties, two separate beliefs, but that's what makes this a democracy. People maybe with some different ideas of how to take America forward, but at the same time working with one common goal, and that's to make America the great U.S. of A, if you will. So, again, we're going to dig into that, and we're going to definitely have a good time with that tonight. So hang in there, folks. Right now in Washington, D.C., in our nation's capital, 65 degrees, mostly cloudy. Los Angeles, 83 and sunny. Right here in Colorado Springs, where we're coming to you live on AJC Radio, it's 51 degrees, mostly cloudy. And in New York City, the Big Apple, partly cloudy, 63 degrees. Folks, if you haven't caught up with it yet, fall has stepped in. So try to stay warm. The nights are getting cooler, but it's getting hotter. Where the season doesn't change here on AJC Radio, we continue to search and bring the message of justice all around the world. And we're going to get into some good stuff tonight. All of us at the AJC Radio team, we're ready to go forward. Feel free to call in tonight for this program. We'd love to hear your comments. Call in to 347-838-8976, 347-838-8976. And I believe you can also go in the chat room and have discussions. Let's get busy, if you will, with bringing this message tonight. And what we've learned about Congressman Issa is good stuff. And this is what makes America what it is, and we're going to get into that. We're going to go now to current events right now. If you haven't heard already, I'm sure you have, and Lisa, we talked about this earlier today. In South Carolina, deputy fired for throwing student, even though she was a minor in a high school classroom, threw her in her sitting chair, broke her arm. Now, let me try my best to understand the nonsense of this officer.
You're not going to understand that, Lamont. No way.
This is incomprehensible. Now, I watched the video today, and I said, let me take a look at what all the mayhem is about here. This deputy, number one, you're dealing with a minor in a high school who happened to be on her cell phone or checking or looking at her cell phone,
no,
maybe from a text.
Just had it in her hand.
He comes, so the teacher gets irritated, calls the school wannabe cop, who eventually calls the deputy sheriff of the sheriff's department, and they send out this huge emergency. We have a problem. A minor in a high school chair looked at her cell phone. Let's get SWAT together and get this situation resolved. And I'm just talking off the top of my head. I'm paraphrasing for myself. However, they sent a deputy sheriff into a classroom with a minor, a young lady, I believe, who stood about 5'2". He picks up this chair, throws it across the room with her in it. I saw him pick up and slam her into the floor because she would not get out of the chair. Now, what threat with her sitting in the chair did she cause for that classroom, Lisa? What threat could she have been that you had to put your hands on a minor? You assaulted her is what you did.
That's right.
So the fact that you lost your job, you need to be brought up on charges.
Yep.
How Absolutely. Do you do that? This girl is 5'2".
There is no reason. See, these people have got to quit doing this crap where they're bringing police into the schools. If you're having trouble with a kid, if the teacher's having a problem with the kid, they need to call the child's parents. They don't need to be bringing the police into the school, trying to have police handle a kid. They won't do what they say. Kids are always, you're always going to have somebody's kids telling you that they're not going to do something that you say. Why do you need to call the police for that? Call their mother, call their father, tell them, come down here and get your child because they won't do what I'm telling them to do. If you're having an issue that's that major that you feel like you need to call the police, call their mama, call their daddy. Tell them, come get your child because they won't listen to me. Why are you feeling the need to call the police because someone's child is doing, I told them to do something and they wouldn't do it, so I'm calling the police out. That is uncalled for.
Well,
it's just ridiculous.
I'll tell you what's most ridiculous. Let me just read a little bit of this, folks. If you're a little outraged, you have every reason to be. And this is what it says, is that Fields firing is not the end of rolling debate over who bears the brunt of the blame for the encounter, which also has brought into question ongoing concerns about the role of police in schools. Students at Spring Valley High School filmed Senior Deputy Fields putting their classmate in a headlock, flipping her desk over, and tossing her across the floor. Todd Rutherford, an attorney for the still unidentified student, told Good Morning America on Wednesday that she had neck and back injuries, a cast on her arm, and a rug burn on her forehead because of Fields' aggressive treatment. And then they go further to say here, we believe that Mr. Fields' actions were carried out professionally and that he was performing his job duties within the legal threshold, wrote his attorney, Scott Hayes. Let me tell you something, Mr. Hayes. You need to turn in your law degree, wherever you got it, Sears, Walmart, Walgreens, wherever you got that law degree, you need to turn it in. How ridiculous are you? His actions were justified. What's that fighting thing that they do? Is it MMA or
MMA. It's MMA.
So he did the actions as a professional MMA fighter to a minor standing at the height of 5'2", a young girl.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, William.
No, I think the thing is that, you know, I watched the clip, and you sit here and you read this, and it said she refused to stop using her cell phone. Now, she didn't pose any threat to him. She didn't take a stand against him. She didn't throw a punch at him. There was no physical action by the teenager to this officer. And this officer takes her and throws her in that desk. And all of us remember those little desks. Those little desks, you know, they don't separate. You kind of slide in there. And throws her across the room, pulls her out, then puts—I saw that. And I was, you know, I mean, me being a father, I was just thinking, I said— I'm glad that wasn't my daughter.
Well, maybe we missed something, William. Maybe that phone was attached to a block of C4 that was going to blow up the school.
A remote detonator.
Yes. Maybe we missed that part.
It was a terrorist plot.
That's it. Maybe that's what we missed.
Well, where's the plot?
We missed.
Okay, so he single-handedly probably saved millions of lives.
Well, look, at the end of the day, the actions of this officer, and then they want to start writing up a character statement for this officer. I heard on the news today, well, his girlfriend is black. Well, let me tell you something right now, and I'll take you all the way back to the slave time. The slave owners loved black women, but it didn't change the actions of what they did to the African Americans in this country. They always play, well, I have black friends. Well, I have black loved ones. What does that have to do with your actions in assaulting this girl? But that's what the media wants to put out there. Well, he's a nice guy. You know what? Mix us on that. AJC Radio, we hold no bars. The bottom line is this. He was out of order. He assaulted a minor. He should be charged for it. He should be in jail for it. Now, you turn the tables and make that young lady a white, blue-eyed blonde, and you got an African-American deputy slamming her to the ground. Guess what would have happened? They would have started to try to lynch him and kill him, and down in South Carolina would have looked for the closest tree. That's the bottom line of what we're talking about here.
Oh, absolutely. If the role reversal or color reversal.
Come on now.
Oh, he would not. They could not have fired him fast enough. Matter of fact, he would be in jail right now.
Oh, no. He wouldn't be in jail.
He would probably be dead.
Dumped in a creek with somebody else.
My bad. I forgot. It is South Carolina. They do actively lynch.
You look at this, and the article says that Deputy Fields, had been sued at least 3 times in the last 10 years, with all 3 lawsuits accusing him of acting aggressively or wrongfully implicating innocent people. Now, this is the same deputy, and I mean, he's like the what they call a resource officer. So he's on site there at the high school, which is, you know, leans and tends for the school to prison pipeline.
Exactly.
It's like, we're not going to discipline you as a student, as a child. We're not going to call your parents. We have an officer here that can arrest you. The young girl that obviously, you know, he pulled out of a chair, she got arrested. Then one of her classmates, who told everybody to start recording, they arrested her as well. So she got held for like 8 or 10 hours for telling the class to record the incident. See, that is what they're doing now. She has a criminal record that they're now she's going to have to get that record wiped off because she told people, record this. He's abusing this girl. Now, her record, this should just be like, you know, she should sue him too. But you look at this and it's like, okay, we're just arresting him. Now, guaranteed, you go up to, you know, whatever, the White High School, there's no deputy sheriffs in there slamming children around.
They're not
getting arrested for saying, you know, I got my cell phone. I dare a police officer to touch a kid's cell phone in a private school.
Oh.
You on your cell phone. You grab that kid in Manhattan.
You mean a public school?
No, I mean a private school. Where mostly it's affluent people.
Sure.
They're in affluent neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. Most of their parents are driving Mercedes-Benz and BMWs and Jaguars and Lexus. Touch one of their children if you want to. That man will be fired instantly.
Yeah.
And everybody around will be sued. In this community in South Carolina, he's allowed to break her arm, do all these things. Sure, he's fired, but
she bears some of that responsibility. Some of this is her fault as well
because she caused
the disruption.
The sheriff said she's the one who started. How? I didn't see her jump up and grab him around his neck and slam him to the ground. Of course, she would have got tased and then 4 warning shots to the back of the neck.
But the thing about this is that I'm seeing the same reoccurring stupid theme where there is a civil rights investigation going on. You know, I mean, this is like a cop-out. It's like they need to bring some formal charges. If you want to investigate something, take that video and investigate that.
I'm sorry, William. Go ahead.
No, I mean, the same thing. It's always the civil rights thing. It's like a cop-out. It's very much a cop-out. We'll financially compensate you because we're not going to bring any kind of real charges against this joke.
Well, here's the problem. If I go out tomorrow and break somebody's arm in the street, I'm going to jail.
Period.
That's the bottom. I broke somebody's arm, and there's a rug burn scratched across my forehead.
That's assault.
This is assault. And we have learned that video cameras don't make a difference to law enforcement because when Eric Gardner was saying, I can't breathe, get off of me, and you have a clear-cut case of murder, no indictment came down
in
that case. Ladies and gentlemen of America, it's time that we wake up. We are not going to shy away from these issues. We will continue to talk about these issues. And I'll tell you what, this officer, whatever problem he has with African Americans, you can get every statement from every black person in South Carolina down a piece of paper saying, well, he was a good guy. He never would be racist like that. You can pile it all up. But today, what we saw in that video says one thing, a racist bigot. That's what
absolutely,
he is,
absolutely.
And he assaulted a 17-year-old, a minor African-American girl. You can give any excuse you want. It smells the same, and I'll tell you what, it stinks all the way up. So I'll tell you right now, folks, continue to monitor this story. He got fired today. Hopefully he will be charged. Don't hold your breath. America's in trouble when it comes to justice. Ladies and gentlemen, we're coming right back, and we will start tonight. Spotlight on Capitol Hill, Congressman Daryl Issa, a force to be reckoned with in our nation's capital. Hang on to your seat, folks. We're coming right back with Spotlight on Capitol Hill. Stay with us.
Here are 50 white guys. Here are 50 black guys. Here's how many white guys can expect to go to prison in their lifetime. The chances amount to 1 out of 17. Now, here's how many black guys can expect the same thing. The chances are 1 out of 3. Why? Lots of reasons. It's complicated, but one thing is clear. There's a racial bias at every level of the criminal justice system. When blacks and whites commit the same kind of crimes, blacks are more likely to be arrested. Once arrested, they're more likely to be convicted. Once convicted, they're more likely to serve longer sentences. Look at the numbers in America's so-called war on drugs. About 14% of America's drug users are black, as are about a quarter of drug sellers. Yet blacks are 34% of people arrested for drug crimes. And those convicted of drug crimes, 46% are black. By the time we factor in sentencing, there are actually more black drug offenders than white ones in state prisons and federal prisons. In the end, the incarceration rate for drug crimes is 10 times higher for blacks than it is for whites. These are the facts. Racial disparities in America's war on drugs are one big reason that one of three black men can expect to go to prison in their lifetime.
Ladies and gentlemen of America and the AJC family, to all our listeners across the USA, the month of December will prove to be one of reflection. As AJC Radio looks back on a year in review, we will be playing our top 8 programs for the month of December. As the holidays approach and the vision for tomorrow begins to set in place, AJC Radio will get you ready. Join us in the month of December listening to our best archived shows, Spotlight on Capitol Hill, different members of Congress that have appeared. You don't want to miss it. Happy holidays from AJC Radio.
How may I help you?
My husband and I just got in a fight, and he hit me.
With one call, you don't have to be a victim anymore.
These fights are getting worse. I don't know what to do.
With one call, you can end the cycle of violence.
We're glad you called. The first thing we want to do is to ensure your safety.
With one call, you can change everything. To speak to a domestic abuse victim advocate, contact your local family advocacy program.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to AJC Radio, Spotlight on Capitol Hill, where we are shining the light tonight on Congressman Daryl Issa. And Congressman Daryl Issa represents the people of California's 49th Congressional District in the United States House of Representatives, a seat he has held since 2001. The 49th District includes Camp Pendleton, the largest Marine Corps training facility in the United States, and the northern portions of San Diego County, southern Orange County. Congressman Issa and his wife, Kathy, live in Vista, California. They have one son, William, and celebrated their 30th wedding anniversary in 2010. As we look a little bit, William, Cliff, Lisa, into Congressman Issa, We said last week on this program that we began to look at the man of Congressman Issa, of the people that we spotlight here on this program. It's very, very important that we look into their life. Now, what brought them to the point of Congress that motivated them to feel like they could make a difference? It says here, as a senior in high school, Congressman Issa enlisted in the United States Army. Through his Army service, he received the ROTC scholarship and graduated with a degree in business from Siena Heights University in Adrian, Michigan. Upon graduation, Congressman Issa was commissioned as an Army officer and ultimately obtained the rank of captain. He completed his active duty military service in 1980 and turned his interest to the private sector. At the height of his career in business, Congressman Issa served as CEO of California-based Directed Electronics, a company that Congressman Issa founded and built in the mid-1990s to become the nation's largest manufacturer of vehicle anti-theft devices, including the highly successful Viper system. William and I remember the Viper, I mean, big, big time. Seems like Congressman Issa, and give me your thoughts on this, William, he's walked a few separate areas, which gives him some cred, if you will, of how to interact and deal and have the position he takes many times for holding people accountable. He's been in corporate America. He's been in the U.S. Armed Forces. He has seen quite a few things in that, and that's just a couple of a few things that he's done prior to making it to the seat in Congress. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it shows that he has, he has a track record of basically just saying, you know, people need to be held accountable. The buck will stop with me. As a CEO of a company, it says here that he was extremely successful. I mean, Viper, of course, we remember that. But he had to be the founder of that organization
sure.
and build it out. That meant the buck stopped with him.
Sure.
He had to drive it. He really had to drive it. And probably he learned a lot of that from his experience in the military. I mean, even to go to the ROTC program to be commissioned, he had his degree, and to continue on to become a captain in the Army.
Sure.
This man, he's driven. I would say that. He's definitely has a track record here of being driven and being successful and saying, you know what, to be successful, we have to be accountable. For my actions, I have to set milestones and goals. I have to move forward and make those things happen.
No, absolutely. Cliff, when you talk about a man from California, you know, Congressman Issa has a reputation really of no nonsense. He doesn't hold back. He believes in what he believes. And we're going to get into that tonight. Very vocal, Cliff, on the IRS corruption situation there. Very vocal on the Fast and Furious situation. This is a man that, through his experience, and I'm going to get to you, Cliff, here in a moment, says here really quickly, as a congressman and leader in California grassroots politics, Congressman Issa championed the cause of smart, efficient government and has pushed legislation to balance the federal budget and promote transparency across the federal bureaucracy. Why is that? Because transparency is so very important. Because that's where the mistrust of the American people come in when people fail to be transparent.
That's right. And without transparency, I mean, you look at the clip that was played earlier when he's talking to the Attorney General Eric Holder, former Attorney General.
The thing is, he's not asking him anything great, anything
sure.
out of that you would think, oh, this is some crazy request that he's got. He's saying, look, the American people's lives were lost during the Fast and Furious during that issue, during when they had that task force or whatever. Lives were lost, and Congressman Issa saying, look, we need some accountability. You cannot come here and tell us you don't know anything about what's going on when this happened under your watch. This happened. You had to sign off on it. He's saying, look, the American people have the right to have this transparency of Congress and all of the departments of the United States, including DOJ, everybody who works for the American people, you need to be transparent. And the one thing that you really have to understand about that is that a person is not trying to expose other people when they're crooked as well. If you have a person that's crooked, they want to cover everybody up. They want to say, no, we don't want to be transparent, because if I force you, then you're going to end up forcing me. If I make you show your hand, you're going to make me show my hand. If I expose your skeleton, you're going to make me expose my skeleton. So you're knowing that Congressman Issa is saying, hey, I got all my chips on the table. You put yours out there as well. Let the American people know what you're doing, why you're getting paid by them. Let's lay it all out. And transparency is key. Without that, we as the American people don't know what's going on with our tax dollars are being used.
Well, I'll tell you what. He had something to say very clear to a former deputy to the Assistant Attorney General, Ronald Wyke. Made a statement that he came to the hearing with a politically correct answer. The answer wasn't correct. And I think sometimes this is the importance of hearings. But you go to Congress and you try to play a game. Well, I can tell you right now, you ran up on the wrong congressman. Congress Issa wasn't hearing it. Let's see what he had to say.
The committee has requested briefings on specific topics, and we have agreed to provide those. We have engaged in a search of great magnitude to ensure that we get the documents that you have asked for to the best of our ability. Over 24 lawyers at ATF and the department are reviewing those documents, and we have been able to provide documents to the committee each of the last 3 working days, yesterday, Monday, and the Friday before. Let me conclude by emphasizing that the department recognizes that congressional oversight is an important part of our system of government. Thank you for inviting me to testify, and I'd be pleased to answer your questions.
I certainly hope so. I recognize myself. Sir, if you're going to count pages like this as discovery, you should be ashamed of yourself. The only thing that this says is internal use only, not for dissemination outside the ATF. That's not discovery. That is saying that nothing within the document requested under any circumstances are we going to be shown. It doesn't take so long if you don't spend your life redacting. The pages go on like this forever. You've given us black paper instead of white paper. You might as well have given us a ream still in its original binder. How dare you make an opening statement? How dare you make an opening statement of cooperation? We've had to subpoena again and again. Your representatives of your organization, of the executive branch, have discouraged witnesses from coming forward. It has only been the courage of whistleblowers like the ones you saw here today that have caused us to have more documents on this case than you have ever suggested turning over. And how dare you talk about 900 pages, all of which were available on the Internet. Your first discovery that you ever turned over, you gave us already available on a Google search documents only. So, sir, what executive privilege are you claiming? Sensitivity is not envisioned. On Monday, we held a hearing here, and I hope you had plenty of people watching it. And if you didn't, get it on YouTube. Not one witness, not on direct or on cross, talked in terms of the kind of unique sensitivity. Instead, they gave us case law and cases involving justice that say just the opposite of what you're saying. Sir, you heard from the family and you heard from the whistleblowers. They have concerns about whether you're charging everybody in Brian Terry's murder. And yes, I'm deeply concerned, and we promised to get to the bottom of it. If somebody wants to call that political interference, so be it.
And there you have it. Ladies and gentlemen of America, make no mistake about this. These are the games that are played when an investigation is going on. Congressman Issa wasn't having it. You're going to come here, and he exposed him to the American people. And he invited them, if you didn't see it, take a trip out to YouTube to look at the hearings, look at the actions. And this is crazy stuff. And this is why, Cliff, the mistrust by the American people, when you're talking about organizations of the administration in Washington, when you see stuff like this, this is what causes America to think, you know what, we have double justice.
That's exactly right. This is what makes the common American citizen say, everybody in DOJ, from Eric Holder down, was above the law. Because they just, like Congressman Issa said, you might as well have given us a ream of white blank paper still in the pack, because all you did was give a sheet of black paper with everything redacted, and redacted just means everything is crossed out. But I tell you, the one thing that really stands out with what he says and tells you the type of person he is when he said, if you want to call that political interference, so be it. We are going to get to the bottom of this. We will find out and give this man's family an answer. You're talking about people died, people were murdered, people were gunned down, and they want to come in with sheets of paper with all of the information crossed off saying, no, we don't. And then lying saying, we've given you unprecedented amounts of documentation with nothing on it. But that statement where he said, if you want to call that political interference, so be it. We're going to get to the bottom of this. The American people deserve an answer. That's what I'm talking about right there.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that, you know what, it makes you very, very grateful that we have somebody in Congress that, and this is what you have to have. You got to have people that are willing to step up to the plate. You can't stay in the dugout, and that's a baseball analogy. You have to get out the dugout, pick up the bat, and step up to the plate. Congressman Issa is doing that, but he's going to make his teammate and the people he works with also accountable for their actions. If you're in the dugout playing baseball and your pitcher just is throwing it like crazy, somebody's coming out on that mound to say, what are you doing? Do we need to replace you? That's personally analogy, William. I see where Congressman Issa is concerned.
Well, I like your analogy. One thing I'd add to it is you got to take a swing. And that's what Congressman Issa did. I mean, that's what it was. They threw a bunch of just crap and said, here you go. Take this paperwork. Have fun. He called him out. You might as well, and Cliff said it, you might as well have left the paperwork as it was, or you just send us blank or black out redacted documents. I don't care. I mean, that's what basically we would say. I don't care. You said that you sent this thinking that we were just going to take it and go away.
Well, they act like nobody was going to look at the documents. You send me a sheet with just completely blacked out saying that this is not for dissemination outside of the ATF. Did you think nobody was going to see that it was just going to come in a box and going to be left there?
But see, I think the thing is, do you think you guys are above the law that you should be enforcing? That's what it is. You're thinking we're going to get away with this because we were elected, we were appointed, and no one calls us in question. But he's saying, no, I'm calling you in question. You're here. This assembly of my peers are those that were elected by the people, for the people, to represent the people. You are here to enforce the laws that are for the people. You are running rogue. You give us this crap. Now we're holding you accountable.
And then,
tell us.
And then he makes a statement saying, we understand that, these congressional hearings are very important to the transparency to the American people. When you've given nothing, you have not even released. I mean, do they even still to this day know how many guns the ATF passed off in Fast and Furious? And he comes and all you have are these sheets of paper that here's all of the documentation.
We're as transparent as this wall I'm looking at.
And then he got him and said, you gave us stuff that was already available on Google.
Yeah.
How is that?
So how is that exactly right?
That was in the public domain, right?
Right. It's already in the public
domain. It was already in the public domain, so it was already filtered. And that's the thing. You have to appreciate this guy saying, no, you are going to be accountable. You gave us this, all right, I'm calling you out right here in front of everybody else. You're going to produce this.
And we're going to get into some more about the Fast and the Furious scandal, some things that happened there. I mean, folks, I'll tell you right now, Fast and the Furious is not something that's lightweight. This was a major issue in our country, and lives were lost as a result of those things happening. As Congressman and leader in California grassroots politics, Congressman Issa championed the cause of smart, efficient government, has pushed legislation to balance the federal budget, and I got to the point of promote transparency across the federal bureaucracy. In 2003, Congressman Issa was the architect behind the successful popular uprising to recall former Democratic California Governor Gray Davis. Congressman Issa currently is a member of the House Judiciary Committee, where he serves as chairman and of the subcommittee on courts, intellectual property, and the Internet. in the House Foreign Affairs Committee, excuse me. He served as chairman of the Oversight and Government Reform Committee during the 112th and 113th Congress, which speaks to the Fast and the Furious, the IRS cover-up, all of those things. Previously, Congressman Issa served on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, the Energy and Commerce Committee, and the Small Business Committee. As the holder of 37 patents himself, Congressman Issa has been vigilant about protecting the intellectual property rights of artists and other entrepreneurs to help protect America's position at the forefront of innovation and creativity in the entertainment and technology industries. His successful efforts to fight human trafficking along the United States border has resulted in tougher laws, stiffer penalties, and more consistent enforcement. Cliff, I want to go to you here on intellectual property, that he is saying he is about protecting the rights of entrepreneurs. Intellectual property consists of what?
Well, intellectual property is, you know, patents, your engineering documents,
sure.
Your basically the way that you produced your product. So that has to be protected in everything from technology to manufacturing, software, everything. Your intellectual property is how you came up with your product.
Okay, I got a question for you, Cliff. I'm headed down B Street. Do you know which street I'm going down right now?
Oh, yeah. You're going down to the software built by IRP6.
And has been illegally held by the FBI. And Congressman Issa, if you're hearing this program, we intend to forward some information to you and hand deliver it if necessary about some corruption in the FBI, Cliff, here, right here in Colorado, who refused. He said he's chairman of the subcommittee that oversees courts. I see something building here. What about you, Cliff?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the man who you go to when you have a problem with a judge. He has oversight. Do you have a problem with the FBI stealing your intellectual property? He's got oversight. So you just take it to Mr. Issa and see if he doesn't handle the issue for you.
Well, I tell you what, I got goosebumps right now. Ladies and gentlemen of America, if you're looking for a warrior to go to war and seek justice in an unjust world, well, I found the warrior. His name is Congressman Issa. Lisa, when you hear about Congressman Issa, he's not a person that's going to shy away from anything, because I believe his conviction tells him to step to the plate. And as William alluded to the analogy, swing the bat.
Absolutely. He's definitely the man you want in your corner when you're dealing with an issue like that. He's definitely going to looks like the type of man who's going to take charge and take care of it.
I mean, this is something, but ladies and gentlemen, make no mistake about it. This is what makes America what it is. This is what democracy is supposed to be about. And this is why Spotlight on Capitol Hill deals with these issues. Because a lot of people go, who do I go to when I'm in trouble and I'm dealing with this? We shine the light on members of Congress who are stepping to the plate, who are there, and their record, William, speaks for itself.
Yes.
As far as the action that they want to bring and hold people accountable. And I'll tell you what, it goes further to say that he not only did that, he wanted to fight, as I said, human trafficking along the United States border, resulted in tougher laws, stiffer penalties, consistent enforcement. And I think what stands out to me more than anything is the consistency. The lack of consistency in this country when it comes to picking and choosing who you want to enforce a law with or not with, that is what divides a nation. And that's what brings racial unrest in America. And not only that, not only the racial issue, but the economic issue. If I'm of a particular social status, you know, I'm not going to get the same justice. Congressman Issa, he said we told the American people, this is someone's mother and father who are grieving the death of this Border Patrol agent who was killed as a result of this illegal activity that is so hush-hush on Capitol Hill in Washington as far as Fast and the Furious. These are things that we are going to dig into even further. Ladies and gentlemen, hang on to your seats. Grab you some barbecue if it's not too cold at your location. And sit down with us tonight. Stay with us, because guess what? We're going into the jungle, and we found a lion that you don't want to mess with. His name is Congressman Daryl Issa. Come on back with us. This is Spotlight on Capitol Hill Thursday. We'll be right back.
Do you know anyone who's been sent to prison who's innocent? The United States is experiencing record numbers of exonerations in cases where people were wrongfully convicted of crimes they did not commit. If you believe that no one should be sent to prison for crimes they didn't commit, there is something that you can do today. By remembering A Just Cause with a monthly, annual, or one-time donation, you can help in the fight against wrongful convictions. Call A Just Cause at 855-529-4252 or visit a-justcause.com and click the donate button. A Just Cause is a 501c3. Wrongful convictions are wrong. Let's be the voice of those who can't speak from behind the wall.
We have a big problem, and we need your help.
It's happening on college campuses, at bars, at parties, even in high schools.
It's happening to our sisters and our daughters,
our wives and our friends.
It's called sexual assault, and it has to stop.
We have to stop it. So listen up.
If she doesn't consent, or if she can't consent, it's rape, it's assault.
It's a crime. It's wrong.
If I saw it happening, I was taught you have to do something about it.
If I saw it happening, I speak up.
If I saw it happening, I'd never blame her. I'd help her.
Because I don't want to be a part of the problem.
I want to be a part of the solution.
We need all of you to be part of the solution. This is about respect. It's about responsibility.
It's up to all of us to put an end to sexual assault. And that starts with you.
Because one is too many.
Ladies and gentlemen of America, Let's Talk is kicking off on November 10th. Bernard Carrick will be here, former NYPD commissioner, first responder, and best-selling author. Bring your copies, book signing available. Come to Colorado Springs Fellowship Church, 7 p.m. Tuesday, November 10th. For further information, call 719-597-8800, 451 Winchon Place. Bernard Carrick, a major force in law enforcement and criminal justice reform. You don't want to miss it. Be there November 10th. We'll see you there.
You must have thrown 1,000 pitches teaching him to hit a home run. Spent countless Saturdays running routes so he could learn to hit an open receiver. Endless afternoons teaching him how to hit the three-pointer. But how much time have you spent teaching him what not to hit? Teaching boys that all violence against women is wrong is one of the most important things a man can do. Learn how to start the conversation at teachearly.org. Brought to you by Futures Without Violence and the Ad Council.
I never thought we would be here today. I never thought this point would come. Throughout 18 months of investigation, through countless areas of negotiations in order to get the minimum material necessary to find out the facts behind Fast and Furious and the murder of Bryant, Border Patrol agent Brian Terry, I always believed that in time we would reach an accommodation sufficient to get the information needed for the American people, while at the same time preserving the ongoing criminal investigations. I'm proud to say that our committee has maintained the ability for the Justice Department to continue their ongoing prosecutions. Neither the majority nor minority has allowed any material to become public that could compromise that. However, the facts remain. Fast and Furious, the Department of Justice permitted sale of more than 2,000 weapons that fell into the hands of the Mexican drug cartels, was both reckless and inexcusable. And it clearly was known by people, both career professionals and political appointees, from the lowliest member on the ground in Phoenix to high-ranking officials in the Department of Justice. But that's not what we're here for today. Today, we're here on a very narrow contempt, one that the Speaker of the House, in his wisdom and assistance, has helped us to fashion. Let it be clear, we still have unanswered questions on a myriad of areas related to Operation Fast and Furious. But today, we are only here to determine, over the 10 months from the time in which the American people and the Congress of the United States was lied to, given false, literally the reverse, statement that no guns were allowed to walk During that 10 months before the Justice Department finally owned up and recognized that they had to come clean, that in fact, Fast and Furious was all about gun walking.
Thank you, and welcome back, ladies and gentlemen of America. I'm Lamont Banks, along with Lisa Stewart, Cliff Stewart, and William Williams. Spotlight on Capitol Hill, the clip you just heard was Congressman Daryl Issa calling for accountability, Cliff, in a Fast and Furious, and I'll tell you what, it's not the Hollywood production with Vin Diesel. This is the Fast and the Furious illegal actions by the Department of Justice. Over 2,000 weapons.
Yes.
If you know anything about the Mexican cartel, 2,000 weapons given or sold. How insane is this?
Well, the whole thing with this Fast and Furious, you know, sting was supposed to be they're gonna sell these weapons to the drug dealers, members who are possibly part of the cartel, let them walk into Mexico. That's where they messed up right there. But you let them walk into Mexico, and then you're supposed to track the weapons to the drug cartel and say, okay, you have these American weapons that came from the ATF. So now we have you and we can arrest you. Well, who's going to give you jurisdiction in Mexico? The military in Mexico is not going to help out America. The drug cartel is not going to help out America. Who did you think was going to follow them in there and say, okay, you have an ATF gun, now we're going to arrest you and prosecute you with it? So instead, you end up with them, you know, end up using these guns, killing people. One of the people who died was his border agent.
Sure.
And Congress has been trying to get to the bottom of it. And the reason I chuckle is because when they finally did get the emails from Eric Holder, I mean, Eric Holder, he's calling ISA names, he's calling Grassley names, he's saying, you know, all of their cronies, calling them idiots and all these things. And it is such, when you look at it and you look at the entire scope of what happened, you say, okay, did the ATF and DOJ, did they really think that it was just like they thought nobody was going to ask them any questions? Like, well, I hold this position, I'm above the law. That is what the bottom line it boils down to. They felt like they were above the law and that the American people would never find out what happened with this Fast and Furious. And when you look at it, it's disgusting. It is, I mean, it is just a slap in the face to America.
Well, it you see the persistence of Congressman Issa. He's not letting it go. You ever seen a dog with a toy in his mouth and you try to pull it from him?
Oh, yeah.
He'll drag you across the floor depending on his size. He's not letting it go, especially if it has the indication that it's a treat. But I'll tell you right now, folks, Congressman Issa would not let this go. The persistence, the constant calling, hearings before Congress. This is a man, William, that he sees his target, and he's going to take it.
He's going after
you are him. Going to answer, because guess what? He said about the American people, they deserve the right to know. This is somebody, William, that apparently took the oath of office very seriously. And people, you're going to have controversy. People are going to say, well, why is he pushing so hard? You're pushing that hard because this is a trend that could cripple the United States. When you start selling weapons to the Mexican drug cartel, do you have any idea how dangerous that is?
Well, I think the thing about this is just absolutely stupid. I mean, this is just absolutely dumb on so many levels. It says the gun buyers, many of whom the Fed suspected were criminals, were permitted to take guns or firearms purchased in the United States and walk
into Mexico.
But this compounds the stupidity. This is what really compounds the stupidity. A similar operation took place years before under the Bush administration called Operation Wide Receiver.
Sure.
It also failed in tracking down guns and drug traffic.
Who is going to tell me one American law enforcement agency who is going to go to Mexico and try to fight against the drug cartel?
Listen
down
to
there?
Me very carefully. During my wrongful incarceration, the Mexican, they call them paisas in prison. They're straight from Mexico. And I remember being in county jail, again, wrongfully convicted. And I said, well, don't you want to just go home? Oh, no.
No, you go home.
One of the guys said to me, man, we'll get dropped off at the border. As soon as you step out your car, you're running from gunfire. So guess what? How insane. The Department of Justice, he's supposed to be the intellectual or intelligent agency for law enforcement, gives weapons to the Mexican drug cartel. They have no reason to leave Mexico. So how do you plan on trying them for a crime when you are complicit in that crime? When I said earlier, Congressman Issa persistent, he's just getting started. But I tell you what, Lisa, when you hear something like this, you're a mother, okay? If you know your federal government is actually allowing, all we see on the news is death and violence to the Mexican cartel that's going on in Mexico. How do you feel about somebody with the highest power in law enforcement? They said, we don't allow guns to walk. We would never do such a thing. But the evidence is contrary to that. How does that make you feel as not only a mother, as an American citizen?
Well, Lamont, I mean, you look at the situation, it's just, I mean, you see how easy it is for a person to get involved in criminal activity. They make it easy. They make getting involved in the drug scene, in the gun scene, they make it so easy for people to get involved in that you have black people going to prison all the time. Every time you look up, there's somebody else being locked up for something. And when you have all this stuff going on, you see more and more people going to prison, and it's like they put it out there so that you can get more people in prison. It's like they set it up that way so that they can get more people locked up.
But what it goes to me, William Cliff, Lisa, how deep does the corruption go? When American lives, this is an agent at the border who was there to protect the border. Your actions cost them not only. How many other people have died with those 2,000 weapons that walked? Congressman Issa is not taking it. He should not take it. People want to criticize Congressman Issa because of his push. If that's your son that was killed on the border, would you want somebody to stop seeking justice? Congressman Issa is one that continues to seek for the answers. Here's what he had to say.
Mr. Attorney General, our investigators have seen 34 of the 35 admitted emails that violate the Federal Records Act. They have only seen the to and from. They have not seen the deliberative contents, and they have not seen the remainder of the 1,200 emails. Mr. Cummings, my ranking member, joined in a letter requesting that we have the full contents pursuant to our subpoena of all 1,200. Will you make them available to the committee based on our bipartisan request?
I will certainly look at the request. It's not something that I've personally been involved in, but I'll look at the request and try to be as responsive as we can. I'm sure there must have been a good reason why only the to and from parts were provided.
Yes, you didn't want us to see the details. Mr. Attorney General, knowing the to and from,
I'm not going to stop talking now. Characterize something as something.
Mr. Chairman, would you inform the witness as to the rules of this committee?
It's inappropriate and is too consistent with the way in which you conduct yourself as a member of Congress. It's unacceptable and it's shameful.
The gentleman has the time, and the gentleman may ask the questions that he deems appropriate.
Well, there you have it, folks. you know, I'm at a loss. You know,
how does Attorney General Holder get mad? You provided the to and from email. That's it. Just the header. It went from me to you. What's in the body of it? Oh, nothing.
Well, what I like about Congressman Issa, I told you earlier, ladies and gentlemen, I've been raised in a household that it is what it is, and it's told the way it is. It is refreshing outside of the Banks family to hear somebody that is saying what? Look, you don't want. Yeah, let me give you the answer, Attorney General. You don't want us to know what's going on with Fast and the Furious. I'm telling you, this is the only thing that is going to constitute change. This is the only thing that's going to say, man, I do not want to go back before Congress on national television and be called a liar. It don't take much to connect the dots. when you're consistently, and this is what we said, William, earlier, this is a pattern, Congressman Issa. He's not getting off of this until he gets answered. Why? He said one point very clear. The American people. Cliff, is that not the purpose? We elect these officials to go to Washington and ask the tough questions and ask for the answers from our elected officials and say, will you stand up? Well, ladies and gentlemen of America, Congressman Issa refuses not to stand up. William, what are your thoughts on that and his comment to the Attorney General of the United States?
I mean, I love it. I had to laugh because it, you know, some of it was funny, but he's basically just telling, says, listen, you're not going to give me this smoke and mirror show. I'm not going to sit here. I did not buy a ticket for a magic act. I'm not here to see Siegfried and Roy, right? Yeah, I'm not here to see this. I am here to get some real results. I'm here for you to tell me exactly what I need to know. I'm asking you point-blank questions. Even in the first clip, he said, well, let me ask you another question. Let me rephrase. Let me just boil this down to you so it gives you no room, no margin for error. You can't, you know, weasel your way out of this. Answer this question. And then Eric Holder gets upset. He gets upset because the bottom line is, you know you're wrong. You know you're wrong. Now you're being called in question.
And as it should be, and it's not just the Department of Justice that he has issues with, but the Department of Justice, everything is monitored as far as the IRS, as far as the issues, the FBI, whatever you want to call it, whatever organization, administration, head, if you will, they're answerable to they're supposed to be answerable to the Department of Justice. If you come across the Department of Justice not doing the right thing, well, how are you going to monitor the IRS or the FBI for their actions when your actions now are questionable? That is the question, ladies and gentlemen. Congressman Issa went even a step further. Not only did he deal with Fast and Furious, he says now the biggest, one of the largest organizations of the administration, the IRS, I believe they said, if I'm not mistaken, employs over 90,000 employees at the IRS here in the United States. He went after them. And why did he do it? Because they began to do things, targeting conservative groups, getting 501Cs, trying to get their 501C nonprofit status. They began to target these organizations. Who's the man that stepped in front of the bus and said, we're not going to allow it? Mm-hmm. Cliff, who was he?
That's Congressman Daryl Issa.
There you go.
And when you look at it, I mean, he didn't just say this, you know, in a hearing. Congressman Issa, he drafted a House resolution saying that he recommends that the House of Reps find Lois G. Lerner, who was the former director of exempt organizations of the IRS, that they find her in contempt of Congress for refusing to comply with a subpoena. He didn't just say, okay, we're just going to say it and we're going to have a hearing. He drafted a resolution, said, I'm drafting a law especially for you, Ms. Lerner, that you be held in contempt for not complying with the subpoena. Now, if you look at, you can be basically held in contempt, and in contempt, you know, you can go to jail or they can sanction you. Now, if they can form a contempt and come up with a resolution against the former director of the IRS, then you look at the IRP 6 case. You look at Judge Christine Arguello. You look at the fact that there were government witnesses who would not comply with the subpoena that were provided. She did nothing to uphold those subpoenas. It's people like Congressman Issa who have that type of oversight that says, look, we will not only hold Lois Lerner, former director of the IRS, in contempt. We can hold a judge in contempt. We can hold a prosecutor in contempt. We can come get you for breaking the law, because the same laws that we hold the American people up to, those same standards of basically not breaking the law, we now government officials, you're held to that same standard. And that is what the American people need, is someone in Congress to say that none of us are above the law. We all have to abide by the same law. We all are American citizens. No matter if you're the Attorney General of the United States, no matter if you're the Director of the IRS, no matter if you're a judge or a prosecutor, you are held by the same law It's only fair. That is what Congressman Issa brings.
And that's what it is. And William, I'm going to get your comments on that here momentarily. Congressman Issa goes, he again asked the question of the IRS. And Cliff, you went to Lerner, who claimed the Fifth. We're going to play that clip where Issa did not lift up anything. She kept saying, I plead the Fifth. I plead the Fifth. He continued to ask the question. You know why? It's on the record that you are avoiding prosecution. That's what you're doing. And let's hear what he had to say about when the IRS began to get out of control. Let's hear what he had to say.
IRS Commissioner John Koskinen appeared before Congressman Daryl Issa's House Oversight Committee Wednesday morning, and the California Republican wasted no time going after the IRS following last year's revelations the agency targeted conservative organizations.
The simple fact is your response to the IRS targeting scandal has been bold by the ranking member standard and dismal by my standard.
At issue Wednesday once again was former IRS employee Lois Lerner, who at the time was head of the agency's tax-exempt division. Lerner, who has apologized for the IRS's action, has invoked her Fifth Amendment right and has refused to testify before Congress. In response, Issa and other House Republicans are trying to get Lerner's emails in an attempt to find out what she knew during her time at the IRS.
Is it your position today that you intend to give us those responsive to some key search word, or you intend to give us all of Lois Lerner's emails?
We are working through the process. We have never said we would not provide those. We are anxious, as I have said.
Will you provide all of the emails for those four individuals?
We will provide you. We are actually trying to, in an orderly way, conclude the investigation on the determination process, which is what the IG report reported to.
Wednesday's hearing comes on the heels of a scathing report issued by House Republicans accusing Lerner and other top IRS officials of knowingly targeting conservative group.
And there you have it. You have Congressman Issa, one war from one war to another war. You're talking about, and listen to this very carefully, ladies and gentlemen of America, you're talking about the IRS, who has a lot to do with your money.
Everything.
Every week. You're going to pay your IRS January through April. You're getting taxes together. You're paying your money. What is that? Listen, what Congressman Issa is doing, he is truly making an attempt to protect the American people. Because, again, if corruption resides at the IRS, that affects my money. That affects your money. And then they begin to target religious organizations seeking nonprofit status, churches. Cliff, we talked before, churches were targeted. There's another street I'm getting ready to go down again.
Oh, come down that street. Come down.
Colorado Springs Fellowship, Pastor Rose Banks. Her members, the church accounts, were illegally gone into for 4 years. I think it's time we make a call to Congressman Issa. Cliff?
Oh, yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, because somebody has to do something about it. You can't just say, okay, well, you have somebody in the federal government, they break the law, they misuse policies and procedures, and then nothing happens to them. Congressman Issa is saying, hey, if you break the law on my watch, if you come up against my committee, if I'm the one who has oversight on you, I'm going to hold your feet to the fire. You're going to answer to the American people because it is only fair. It's only fair that the laws that are put in place that you have to, that you are held by the same laws that I'm held by, that he's held by. If you break the law, you deserve to be prosecuted no matter what your position is, no matter what your title is. You deserve to be prosecuted if you break the law. And Congressman Issa, I mean, that is a stance that he takes. When you're taking a stance against the IRS, against the Attorney General, against the ATF, against DOJ, nobody is exempt. Nobody, you know, gets away with breaking the law. Well, that's just the way it is.
I'll tell you, like I said before, it may be a little chilly outside tonight where you are. But I'll tell you, the fireplace is burning here at AJC Radio. Well, we have found and came and come across, if you will, the lion in the jungle, man. That's just, there's no other way to say it. These are the things that are meant to protect America. When you're tired of getting upset about how Congressman Issa is talking to you, deal with what he's asking you.
That's true.
And give him an answer. That's because true. At the end of the day, take the emotion out of it. These are the lives of the American people. This is why Congressman Issa continues persistently asking for the truth. If that's not necessary in Congress, then I don't know what is. Ladies and gentlemen, stay with us. We're coming back with the continued spotlight on Capitol Hill with Congressman Daryl Issa. And, man, it is heating up here at AJC Radio. Spotlight on Capitol Hill, Congressman Daryl Issa. We dig even deeper. We're coming right back. Stay with us. Ladies and gentlemen of America, the month of October happens to be the National Domestic Violence Awareness Month, an issue that is crippling America, destroying families, and shattering homes. Today, we take a moment to reflect and to remember the victims of domestic violence. We want you to know there is a way out. Ron LeGrand in Washington, D.C., the vice president of the National Network to End Domestic Violence, has set out on a journey to execute change that is about saving lives, saving mothers, saving daughters, saving friends from the cruelty of domestic violence. We ask that if you have any issues, please call the Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233 as we heal the wounds of domestic violence as a nation. AJC Radio takes a moment to remember the victims, and our fight will always continue.
These are the voices that prisoners in solitary confinement hear every day. Out of Arizona's total of 2,076 prisoners held in solitary, 30% are taking prescription medication to deal with mental illnesses, and 11% have diagnosed schizophrenia. Experts report that the extreme and prolonged isolation exacerbates pre-existing conditions and appears to even cause mental illness in prisoners who were not previously ill. While prisoners deserve punishment, Arizona can do better. We need to change the solitary confinement rules. Unlike any other states, Arizona prisoners are held in 8x10 cells for at least 23 hours a day, with no windows and virtually no human interaction. Perhaps the best way to fix solitary confinement so it strikes a balance between punishment and humanity is to decrease the size of solitary units. Colorado, Texas, Mississippi, and Illinois have decreased the size of their units, only admitting prisoners who need the rehabilitating experience, and have saved over $6 million without compromising prison safety. A study produced in Colorado reported that after decreasing the number of solitary units, prisoners experienced an improvement in overall mental health of the confined inmate population. How can we do this? We need to reach out to Director of Corrections Charles L. Ryan, asking him to decrease the number of solitary units. Solitary confinement needs to remain a place for punishment and behavior change, but it can also be a place of innovation and rebuilding.
Mr. Kashari, I appreciate that you were in on those negotiations with leadership. The majority of Republicans voted against it once and twice. Mr. Kucinich wasn't in the meeting where Secretary Paulson came in with the Vice President and Fed Chairman Bernanke and made all these assurances that there was absolutely a critical, immediate need to get rid of the corrosive derivative products, you know, all the different names,
for this, you know, ubiquitous, you know, sub-S retraded credit default swap, blah, 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 blah. Okay? But they talked about them as though they knew what the hell they were. You got the money and you immediately said, what items, what auction? Would you please respond to, under oath, when did you go from what you told members of Congress in open and closed sessions was the absolute reason to have this money immediately to buy a specific group of assets, about $350 billion in the U.S., about $350 billion held by other countries and other funds outside the U.S. Those assets were what you said was locking up and destroying the market. When did you first hear that that money was not going to be spent that way?
Congressman, the day on October 3rd, the day that the Congress passed and the President signed the legislation, we immediately created several policy teams developing asset purchase programs, all the details, both mortgage-backed securities.
Now, that wasn't the question.
No, I'm
I want to know the time and date because I want to know whether Congress was lied to or whether there was a team all along that had an alternate, one or more people that had an alternate idea of how this money would be spent.
All right, ladies and gentlemen of America, welcome back to AJC Radio, Spotlight on Capitol Hill. And I'll tell you right now, folks, this has been one evening as we have got into or made an attempt to show you the man and the legend, Congressman Daryl Issa, who I have nicknamed a lion, if you will, in a jungle. Congress is not any place that is less than a jungle when you're talking about lawmakers fighting and warring for justice and positioning themselves for survival, if you will. But the key here is the protection of the American people. This is what Congressman Issa Cliff, to me, gives that impression. And William, he gives that impression as well, that he is about the protection of the American people.
Yes.
When you're talking about these organizations, he's talking here, I believe, as far as the Asset Relief Act, he's addressing and asking these questions because they're saying certain things that don't necessarily make sense. You got to ask these folks tough questions. They're not going to volunteer the information if corruption and things like that are involved. Your thoughts on that, William?
I think that, you know, I'm really looking at this man differently. You know, he is someone that has came up through. He's a successful businessman, but he's fought his way. He's fought and clawed his way through. He's not. You're not getting ready to throw, you know, get anything by him. He's not getting ready. You're not getting ready to throw wool in his eyes. And that's what he was basically talking about. He's like, listen, before you, I even sign off on this, I want to know where this money's going. And he's basically, he's looking out for us. He's looking out for the taxpayer because he knows that bailing out Wall Street, bailing them out to the tune of, I don't know how many billion dollars it was. He was basically saying, listen, before I throw this money at you, throw good money after bad, I want to know what's going on. I want to know what's your agenda. I want to know if you have a plan. And because bottom line is, we, the U.S. people, are paying for this, or paying for your mistakes, paying for your bailout. And so you're coming to me asking for this. You're asking me for a huge handout. Why should I give it to you, and where is this money going? So I tell
well,
you.
Without question. I agree with you on that. Cliff, your thoughts on that? We said it earlier, the persistent perseverance of Congressman Issa. Apparently, as William alluded to, he had to learn that being in the Army, also in the military. His whole life has placed him in a point of leadership, and I think that's what he's done. Say that, William, your thoughts on that?
Well, I was just thinking, you know, he's like us. You know, he came from, you know, probably a middle class background, but he had to work his way up. He had
sure.
to work his way up, and that's what you see. You see him asking people to be accountable. He's asking them. He said, "Listen, before you try to pull the wool out of my eyes with Fast and Furious, tell me this. Before you try to pull the wool out of my eyes before this buyout or bailout, tell me why I should do this. Tell me why." And these are common sense questions.
Well, here's what he says. Going to his background, William. He says, in 2008, when Congress was asked to pass the Troubled Asset Relief Program in the wake of an historic financial crisis, Congressman Issa stood by his instinct as a businessman and opposed giving a blank check bailout to Wall Street. He voted against all bailouts during the financial crisis, refusing to give up and concede to those who favored a bailout-centered response to this and future financial failures. Congressman Issa put forward a proposal to create a bipartisan commission to uncover the root causes of the financial crisis. This idea was passed into law early 2009. The investigation commenced in January 2010. Congressman Issa expected the results would reveal government mistakes and protect U.S. taxpayers from future runaway government intervention in the financial and housing market. So, again, his instinct, Cliff, his instinct to say, wait a minute, do we want to set precedent and say, hey, just get in trouble, do what you want, and we'll just throw you a line? That's not the position he took. He took a financial position of responsibility.
Tough love.
A tough love approach. Good words, William, on that. To say, look, do we set precedents to just let the government run wild, these companies run wild, and do these things and say, well, we don't have to worry about how we do or conduct ourselves because all we got to do is ask Congress to bail us out.
That's true.
That's right. What message does that send, Cliff?
Well, it sends a message that he has the American people's best interests at heart, that he's not – that being a businessman, he understands, sure, it takes commerce, sure, it takes industry to keep a nation running, but you don't let commerce and industry just walk over your citizens. You don't give them a handout or a bailout or whatever you want to call it, a free pass, just because they ask for one and say, hey, you know, we're going to lose money. No. What are you going to do, and what type of impact is it going to have on the American people if we cut you this check of this however many hundreds of billions of dollars? That is the hard question that he asked to say is, what impact is it going to have? How are you going to cover it? And when it all boils down to it, we don't want to write off a few hundred billion dollars just so that you can stay in business. The American people's best interests are what have to be at heart here.
Well, and I think that's his approach is almost the same as we've seen in the EU with them bailing out Greece. You know, they bailed them out a couple of times. And the same thing. I mean, we just don't manufacture money. We don't manufacture. You call down to the mint and you say, hey, listen, print out a couple of tons of money so we can just bail out the banks. I mean, that's not the way it happens. And that's what he's saying. I'm not going to sign off on this. I'm not going to give you a blank check for you to go out and just do this again. Because basically what you did was, number one, he sees the fact that it was wrong. They were actually had a lot of policies, a lot of loans, bad debt loans, a lot of products that they were selling. They knew that they were selling it was wrong. So they were already ripping people off from that side. Now, you take money, you profit and gain, your companies go under, like Lehman Brothers or the others that went under, and then you're going to come to Congress, you're going to come to the floor of the Senate and say, you know what, I made a mistake, I lost my wallet, I lost my money, I need some more money. Now, Cliff, that you and I know, if you'd have went, and any of us know, if you'd have went, you lost your money. Your mom gave you lunch money. You lost your lunch money. Guess what? You're probably not going to eat lunch that day. Mom was going to teach you a hard lesson. That's what he did. He taught him a hard lesson.
Well, I tell you what. You know, Congress, William and Cliff, Lisa, that's just the beginning of what Congressman Issa is doing. He steps up to the plate in every situation. But this is what this is one of the legislations that he actually introduced back in, it looks like February of 2013. He introduced the Violence Against Indian Women Act. Now, we understand that Vice President Biden had introduced Stopping Violence Against Women. He was the founder. He pushed that. But this particular bill, he stepped outside of the box and reached out to a minority, if you will. And it says here, Representative Issa reintroduced the Violence Against Women Act on Friday. This is back in February of 2013. The bill authorizes Indian tribes to exercise jurisdiction over crimes of domestic violence that occur in the Indian country of that tribe. The current law enforcement system for Native American women is broken, said Congressman Issa. Too many victims of domestic violence cannot get access to law enforcement during times of emergency, and more will continue to suffer unless Congress acts. He is saying here, based upon who he is, the man, Congressman Issa, we cannot allow, in this country, whatever you want to think about it, minorities, many times, of every race, if you're a minority, you're pushed aside. Well, it doesn't really matter. How many people honestly considered that if somebody's living on an Indian tribe piece of land, that protection for those women of that Indian tribe should be protected. What does that say to you, William, about Congressman Issa? It speaks to his character.
It does.
It speaks to that I care about people. Because guess what? How many Native Americans make up American citizens in this country?
Right.
They matter. All lives matter. Cliff, your thoughts on this step that Congressman Issa took? To me, it's over the top in a good way.
Well, you know, the irony that he does this, especially with this month being the, Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and you know, you look at it and you say, how do you take the rights of a person, and because of where they're located, they don't deserve to be protected. Their life is in danger, but because of where you're located, we can't rescue. If you're on you, this is America. Everybody has the right to freedom. Everybody has the right to protection. It shouldn't matter that you're on a reservation. Sure, it's considered another part of America. It's considered another nation of that native people. But when it comes down to the fact that you're on American soil and somebody is in danger, we cannot, as American citizens in good conscience, sit back and watch somebody get hurt. It just is not who we are as the American people. It is not what we were founded on. And Congressman Issa is ensuring that, hey, we're going to put it in law that if something happens to you, no matter where you are in the continental U.S., we are going to be there to protect you and to help you.
No, without question. And folks, this is what we're learning week after week on this program. People in Congress are not what they are perceived to be through the media. They're just not.
Right.
I mean, I've learned some things tonight about Congressman Issa that, man, you know, I have to give him a pat on the back and say, look, thank you for your service to this country. Thank you for reaching out to the people that society says, what, do they really matter? Absolutely they matter. And for him to take that approach, William, is just one of many, 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 many things that the congressman is doing. It is something that makes you stop and take notice of what is happening in this country. We have members of Congress that are fighting. They're going through the sweat, the tears, the late nights, the voting, the conflict, a battlefield, if you will.
Absolutely.
In any place of war, you have to have some officers. You have to have a general.
You got to have warriors
that are going to fight.
I
referenced the movie, and I apologize for it, Braveheart. And I'll tell you what. That was a movie, William, that when you saw warriors fighting against all odds, and when they were trampled on, and man, they stepped up and said, you know what, we're not going down.
Yeah, my personal favorite,
unbelievable,
is 300.
Another,
you know,
one.
When he says, you know, this is Sparta. You know, it's standing up and saying, we are warriors.
This is what it is, and you can say it's Hollywood. I know our host, Cliff Stewart, always references Last of the Mohicans, which I have yet to watch. Cliff, what is the? Tell me, what are we dealing with? A Congressman Issa? He fits all roles in all these movies. Talk to me.
Well, in Last of the Mohicans, the bottom line is everybody has their own human right, no matter who you are, where you're from, and it's about fighting for the rights of all people. That is what makes that movie an epic adventure.
I got you. That
they are tracking down justice,
right,
for everyone involved in the movie. It's like, it doesn't matter if you're white, doesn't matter if you're Native American, doesn't matter who you are, justice should prevail, and they go after that. So that is why Last Mohicans is an epic adventure, and it reminds you of who Congressman Issa is.
Look, folks,
here's
the issue, though, ladies and gentlemen. We are referencing movies, but make no mistake about it. The battle for injustice, it affects every part of society. When Hollywood makes movies, many times the movies are to send a message. Injustice and warriors and wars and battles that we have to fight goes all the way back before I was ever even thought about it. Okay? Here's the thing, what we're saying about Congressman Issa. People can kind of relate to a movie or a competition. Congressman Issa is doing things that, you know what, people don't really like to do these days. people kind of, I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want to ruffle any feathers. I don't want to step on any toes. Congressman Issa is not only doing that, he is telling you to take off your sandal or your shoe so I can step on it deliberately.
Absolutely.
And I'll tell you what, until we get that mindset, nothing changes in this country.
That's right.
That's right.
Congressman Issa, people were scrambling like a bunch of ants on an anthill that they saw, whatever. But guess what? He got some answers,
well, he's rolling
and
up,
he continues to get the answers.
He's rolling up his sleeves. And
man, that's awesome.
He said, I'm getting dirty here. I'm here to get dirty. I'm here to do work.
Well, here, go ahead.
No, that's the thought. I mean, like you said, there's people that are going to play politically correct. They're not there to do anything. They're not there to ruffle any feathers. He's the exact opposite. He's there to ruffle feathers. He's looking for feathers to ruffle.
Well, I'll tell you what, ladies and gentlemen of America, please understand the thought tonight. Spotlight on Capitol Hill, the reason this initiative was born, America needs to know that if I'm backed in a corner, there is somewhere you can go on Capitol Hill and get answers. Make no mistake about this, Congressman Issa is not the only warrior on the Hill, Lisa, as we have learned in this process. He is surrounded by warriors. But what he is doing and the steps that he has taken and the stand that he has taken should make America's hearts feel a lot better tonight. Because I'll tell you right now, we are in a war in this country. What is that war? It is a war against injustice. It is a war of entitlement, against entitlement and government entitlement to think we can do anything we want to do and nobody will answer. That mindset and that culture has to change. How does that change? When you go to your voting, and this is a voting year coming up, election year, when you take the time to go vote, this is the result of that voting. Please don't take voting lightly. This is how change happens. And I said it once, I'll say it again, the people in California got it right again. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Spotlight on Capitol Hill. We come back with our closing thoughts on Congressman Daryl Issa, who is making a difference and taming a jungle of injustice. We salute you tonight, Congressman Issa. We're coming right back. America, stay with us.
Ladies and gentlemen of America and the AJC family, to all our listeners across the USA, the month of December will prove to be one of reflection. As AJC Radio looks back on a year in review, we will be playing our top 8 programs for the month of December. As the holidays approach and the vision for tomorrow begins to set in place, AJC Radio will get you ready. Join us in the month of December listening to our best archived shows, Spotlight on Capitol Hill, different members of Congress that have appeared. You don't want to miss it. Happy holidays from AJC Radio.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to AJC Radio Spotlight on Capitol Hill. If you feel like it's a little warm where you're at right now, perhaps you may feel mosquitoes on your back because you've entered the jungle here at AJC Radio. And we have located the lion on Capitol Hill by the name of Congressman Daryl Issa. And I'll tell you right now, William, when you sit, and these are our closing thoughts on Congressman Issa as we get ready for the segment, what you didn't know about the IRP 6 case, and that gets bigger. But actually, William, this brings in Congressman Issa even in that discussion that we'll begin to look into, and we believe as we are going to fight for justice for these men, that Congressman Issa may play a definite role in fighting against the injustice that happened to these young men. Yeah. We'll get to that momentarily. Your closing thoughts on Congressman Issa, and no respect to the Congress, disrespect rather to the Congressman, we could probably do 3 shows on you, Congressman Issa, if you are out there listening tonight. I'll tell you what, we need to come back, Lisa. We've said it before with some lions and some warriors there in Washington, D.C. We need to come back sometimes because there's so much to the man. Your thoughts?
can't fit them all in one show. There's just too much to squeeze into one two-hour show. It's really, not enough time.
It really is. And no disrespect to our women Congress
folks. Absolutely not.
I'll tell you what, if I'm in a safari in Africa, I don't care if it's a male lion or a female lion, I'm running. So we've had the opportunity to display the women lions, Lisa, here on this program as well.
That's right.
So our respect and our shout-out to the ladies tonight that are fighting for justice. William, your closing thoughts on Congressman Issa.
I say he's a champion. He's a warrior. He's fighting for us. He's calling them out, saying, listen, justify your actions. And that's what we need. We need somebody in Congress representing the little guy.
Absolutely. Cliff, your thoughts, closing thoughts on Congressman Issa.
That's right. Congressman Issa is one of those members of Congress out there fighting for the American people. It's obvious in his hearings, it's obvious in things that we heard here tonight in the clip, that he is holding everyone's feet to the fire. Nobody gets away with breaking the law. No, it does not get past him. And so he's one of those members that he's for the American people. That's why we spotlight people like him on AJC Radio, because you have to be about the American people. Otherwise, why are you a member of Congress?
Well, the energy in here is something, it gets better. Lisa, your closing thoughts on Congressman Issa and what we've learned tonight.
Well, I think what we've learned the most about him is that he is, what's the word I'm looking for? He doesn't take any crap.
Well, there you go.
I mean, when he's out there in those hearings and he's talking and he's questioning people and he's putting them out there, he's calling them on the carpet. He's not just going to let them give him any answer. He's gonna push for what he believes. He's gonna fight for it. He's gonna make you answer one way or the other. You're gonna give him the answer. And just like Cliff was saying early in the show, how he was telling them that if they thought it was judicial, if he thought he was crossing the line or interfering, then so be it. He was gonna get the answers that needed to be gotten. And I think that's an important thing in our Congress right now. We need people that are going to just push and get the truth and get the answers and not let people take a back seat, not let the truth take a back seat because, well, I don't want it to look like I'm crossing over. I don't want it to look like I'm interfering. Interfere if it means we're going to get the truth, because I think that's when it boils down to it, that's what we need. We need people that are going to get the truth, get to the bottom of the issue so that we can make this country great again.
Oh, absolutely. Well spoken. And I'll tell you what, that's exactly what it's about. We are thankful tonight that we've had the privilege tonight to honor Congressman Issa, who has stepped to the plate. We will continue to reach out and seek for justice for members of Congress to take action against any injustice and hold these organizations, whether it's the Department of Justice, whether it is the Inspector General's Office, whether it's the Department of Homeland Security, any place where things need to be looked at and monitored and managed and people held accountable. We seek the Congress, and tonight we have found what we believe to be in Congressman Issa, a warrior that can fight these battles collectively there on Capitol Hill to make a difference. We salute you tonight, Congressman. Thank you for your service to not only the state of California, but to the United States of America as you make changes that impact a nation. As we go from that topic, now we take a look at what you didn't know about the IRP 6 case. Let's take a trip to injustice.
Ladies and gentlemen of America, what is going on when innocent men get locked away? Ladies and gentlemen, have you stopped to ask the question, where is justice? It's far away. The IRP 6, David Banks, Gary Walker, Demetrius Harper, Kendrick Barnes, Dave Zappolo, and Clinton Stewart have pondered that question for 3 years. Where is justice? What you didn't know about the IRP 6 case is the question. We will deliver those answers on our new segment, What You Didn't Know About the IRP 6. We will seek and search for justice. We will ask the tough questions. We will demand answers as justice lays idle in the streets of America. We look for the answer. What you didn't know about the IRP 6 case starts right now.
Well, on the morning of 2005, the day of the FBI raid, I remember someone coming in my office saying the FBI was here. And I thought they were joking, possibly, but I looked out the window and saw a lot of FBI agents, so immediately went to the front entrance and just a feeling of shock.
Today, it really makes me angry. I remember being shocked the day it happened. I remember seeing the FBI agents running into our building, chasing down people.
The events of that day are quite clear to me, and it really brings one to realize in this country, you're guilty until proven innocent.
Basically waiting for our morning stand-up meeting we have every morning, and hearing the commotion of all these agents coming to the door, and, you know, basically being ordered around into the break room without giving any explanation of what's going on or why or who these people were. I remember it took about a minute or two before they even identified themselves as the FBI. The benefit of the doubt was not given to anyone. It was almost, I mean, you want to stand by certain truths about the United States that, you know, you're innocent until you're proven guilty. And it was like, from the minute they walked in that door and the way we were treated as criminals, we were treated as if, we were treated as if we weren't even Americans. And it just shocks you sometimes that when you think back and you realize how authority in the wrong hands can, you know, really take away your freedom.
We were out there trying to help them, and they just really tried to demoralize us.
Contributing to the development of a lot of those concepts and precepts and the architecture and the technical framework for the software. When I heard about the raid, I thought, how weird is this? How ironic is this? Do they want to, what are they doing? And if they, what is the intent? And if they shut us down, could this be purposely done? That we're doing so well to help them that they don't want us to do that well? What is it?
There needs to be some justice in this particular type situation. And somebody out there knows something on exactly what happened to our company and what reasoning and what events led somebody to come actually do something so sinister to our company and to try to impede our progress. And yes, we do believe somebody came in there for the express purpose to acquire our software for illegal means just on the eve of us closing business and having some of the most promising meetings to conclude business that we had ever had in the history of our company.
There you have it. Tough questions in need for answers. Lady Justice has gone missing. Where is she? The RP6 and countless thousands are seeking her out. What you didn't know about the RP6 story, to be continued.
What you didn't know about the RP6 case, and I'll tell you right now, folks, you may want to grab a pen and paper of the things that you didn't know that took place and the level of injustice that took place as a result of the wrongful conviction of the RP6. They are Gary Walker, David Banks, Dave Zerpolo, Kendrick Barnes, Demetrius Harper, and Clinton Stewart. Tonight, we show honor and respect to these men who sit and languish wrongfully in a prison cell as a result of injustice. What you didn't know about the RP6, between May and June of 2010, letters were actually sent to Senator Mark Udall and the Department of Justice, Office of Professional Responsibility, attention to Mary Patrice Brown, requesting inquiry into the actions of the U.S. Attorney and FBI in the handling of the RP6 case, probing into banking records of church members. The pastor, Rose Banks, of Colorado Springs Fellowship Church, without subpoena. Here's how they responded. There was no response or action. Letter was sent from Colorado Springs Fellowship Board of Directors. What you didn't know is that this failure to act by our government officials who are there to monitor misconduct, Cliff, no action, no response. to such serious requests for help, all those requests went ignored.
That's right, and I mean, that list that you read off, Mont, that is a short list, but yet it is so profound. You know, just the fact that you don't get any action from so many of these government agents. I mean, that was dealing with the church issue and subpoenas, but there are so many people that we reached out to that did not respond. Everywhere we went, they would send us somewhere else. I mean, there are so many people at Department of Justice. I mean, the obviously Attorney General Eric Holder. We had several people in his department. I mean, the Jack Smith, the Chief of Public Integrity Sector, the Inspector General Michael Horowitz at DOJ, Executive Office for United States Attorneys at DOJ, the Office of the United States Supreme Court, so many places. There's about 40 places that we sent letters to, and we get these cookie-cutter letters back.
Well, absolutely.
This issue doesn't lie under our jurisdiction, or you need to go to this place or that place. Everywhere we went, just round-robin, sending us back. And I'm telling you, the level of frustration, but now, you know, we are grateful that we're getting traction with Congress. But when we look back and we see the people who would not respond, this has to be exposed and has to be – the American people have to understand when you reach out to certain places that this is the response that you're going to get. This is the non-response that you're going to get, so that they're not wasting time or money dealing with some of these agents.
And that's unacceptable. And steps were taken by the IRP6 to provide proof that these charges were false. What you didn't know is that on September 30th, 2010 – IRP Solutions software reviewed and was examined by Don Filfer of Cali Forensics. Cali Forensics is a computer forensics firm. Mr. Filfer is a retired FBI supervisory special agent for the White Collar Crime and Computer Crime Squad. What you didn't know is that Mr. Filfer, is also a certified fraud examiner and an attorney. This is what his report said: that the Silk software did not appear to be vaporware, but included a large amount of complex coding that would have required significant development. Number one, the work that he saw, Cliff, through his examination, saw intense work that went into developing that software. That's what you didn't know, and none of that was presented to a jury. Is that correct, Cliff?
That's right. These are the things that Judge Christina Arguello would not let be presented as evidence.
Wow.
I mean, that's why when you look at the IRP6 case, you look at the level of injustice, you look at the level of corruption from people like Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch, people like Judge Christina Arguello, that you say, you're going to tell me that information that proves that I'm a legitimate business, this is not allowed to come in when the basis of all of these charges says that I was not a legitimate business, that my intent was to go out and fraud someone, when the intent was to develop, market, and sell a product, the Silk software that IRP Solutions developed.
And, well, let's go a little bit further this is awesome, interesting information that makes you scratch your head, ladies and gentlemen. Also, what you didn't know is that the Silk software was functional at the time of the search warrant. During the February 2005 raid on IRP Solution offices, the software was functional. Not allowed. The jury wasn't allowed to hear that. What you didn't know is that the software contained many notable features, making it a functional product for the intended consumer. Again, the intent of the IRP6, you got Cali Forensics saying this is detailed work that went into this. This wasn't nothing I went online and said, print this off and give me a fake certificate. This was work, and this is what they do. They're specialists. What you didn't know is that there was a market for the functionality that Silk software offered would undoubtedly be of interest to many law enforcement agencies, namely and including the Department of Homeland Security.
That's right. I mean, not just of interest. Department of Homeland Security gave IRP Solutions
requirements to build the software, gave them requirements, make these customizations for Department of Homeland Security. Code this in so that it can be used by Department of Homeland Security. So it's not, it's, this is why you know that the federal government was basically on a witch hunt, because Department of Homeland Security said, hey, IRP Solutions, built this out, customize it so it fits what DHS needs. IRP Solutions return says, hey, that's what we've done. Several iterations of that. Okay, IRP Solutions, we as DHS, we're going to put you in the budget. 2 weeks later, FBI raid.
Well, I'll tell you what, William, you had one point as we close this segment. What is it?
Well, I worked on it. I mean, so we knew it was real. And the modifications we did for New York, this was, I believe, the year prior to. So, I mean, this by the time the raid happened, the guys had, the software was real. They were out there, you know, really pushing business. They'd already had the agents involved. I mean, so that's all I remember.
Well, there you have it. Ladies and gentlemen, what you didn't know about the IRP6 case, we will ask the tough questions. We will seek the answers of injustice that have taken place. We will look for the perpetrators of justice. We have those perpetrators' names. Lisa, who are they?
We have U.S. Attorney John Walsh, Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch, Assistant U.S. Attorney Sunita Hazra, Attorney Greg Goldberg, Federal Judge Christine Arguello, Appellate Judge Jerome Holmes, Appellate Judge Bobby Baldock, Appellate Judge Harris Hart, Federal Judge R. Brooke Jackson, Magistrate Judge Craig Schaefer, Court Reporter Darlene Martinez, FBI Agent John Smith, FBI Agent Robert Moen, former Federal Agent John Epke, former Federal Agent Gary Hilberry, Attorney Thomas Goodread, Attorney Clifford Barnard, Attorney Thomas Richard, Attorney Robert Berger, Attorney Mitchell Baker, Attorney Boston Staten Jr., Attorney Rick Kornfeld, Attorney Mark Garrigo, Susan Holland of ETI Professionals, and Samuel K. Thurman.
And thank you for that, Lisa. And ladies and gentlemen of America, we will continue to seek justice. Day after day, we will rise to the challenge of war. We will not go away. A just cause will not cease until we find justice for the IRP6. Make no mistake about it, this battle wears on, and we will continue to fight this fight as we search to bring the message of justice all around the world. Cliff?
Yes, we want to say thank you to everyone in the chat room tonight. Excuse me. We appreciate all of your interactions in there, all your comments and your questions. Also, we want to say thank you to our production team, Captain Kyle and Dustin Jackson of K&D Productions, helping out Ill Skillers Girl in the control room, making sure that you hear what it is that we have to say. Also, I want to say thank you to our production support team. They give us accurate and up-to-date information so we can pass that on to you. And to the truth, we know you're out there, and we appreciate it.
All right, and thank you for that, Cliff. And, again, all of this program can be heard at AJCRadio.com, where all the programs are archived. And please follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, reach out, tell your friends and neighbors all across the United States that we are the organization fighting for justice. And we appreciate all of our listeners across this fine U.S. of A. as we continue to seek answers. And I said it before, I'll say it again, Lady Justice has gone missing. Help us find her, that justice might come not only to the RP6, but all those that have been victims of injustice. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Have a good night. Take care.
Do you solemnly swear that you will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that you will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that you would take this obligation freely, without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that you will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which you are about to enter, so help you God. Congratulations, you're now members of the 114th Congress.
Mr. Attorney General, will you agree to come before the Oversight Committee without the need for a subpoena in the January timeframe? I will not. Mr. Attorney General, will you agree to come before the committee I chair, the Oversight Committee, the one you produced these documents to, in the January timeframe without the need for a subpoena.
I will consider it, but I will note I've testified on four occasions with regard to this matter. I've appeared before you at least on two occasions.
You've appeared before this committee. Your organization pushed back on the request for a joint hearing here today. Not will you consider it, but do I need to serve a subpoena on yourself and Lanny Brewer and the other people under direct investigation of my committee, or will you agree to come voluntarily in the January timeframe before the committee?
I will consider any request that you make.
I thank you, Mr. Attorney General. I now would go to the questions of emails. This is the documents you refer to. Most of these documents, 5,000 or so, are in fact emails. Mr. Attorney General, I have a question for you. Not one of these emails, in fact, is yours. Aren't you a prolific emailer?
No.
Don't you email?
Yes.
Do you have a personal email account and as well as an Attorney General's email account?
I have an email account at the Justice Department, yes.
Do you have a personal email?
Yes.
Do you regularly email to Lanny Brewer, your former partner, and your head of criminal division?
No, I wouldn't say regularly. There are only a limited number of people who know my email address in the Justice Department.
Let me cut to the chase. Don't you think it's a little conspicuous in his absence that there's not one email to or from you related to Fast and Furious in any way, shape, or form?
There are a variety of reasons why the emails that we have shared with you are there. We have shared in an unprecedented way email information that no Justice Department, no Attorney General has ever authorized before. You have deliberative information contained, I guess.
But isn't it true that executive privilege does not flow to the Attorney General, only to the office of the President? So deliberative process within your department running law enforcement, in fact, doesn't serve executive privilege. As the chairman said going on, you haven't cited any reason that these would not have been delivered.
In making production determinations, we have followed what attorneys general in the past have always used as applicable standards, and these are Republican as well as Democratic attorneys general, and the information that we have provided to you has been responsive, has been, I think, fulsome, and also has been unprecedented.
Well, unprecedented would be an attorney general who knew nothing about something where his own DAG, now his chief of staff, was intimately familiar. Gary Grindler was well aware, according to documents provided, of Fast and Furious on March 12, 2010. Are you aware of that? That he was aware of Fast and Furious and what its procedures were on March of 2010?
It was certainly brought to his attention as part of a regular briefing that he got from ATF, but he did not hear during that briefing anything about the tactics.
Really? Is that why in his own handwriting, when he talks about going to stash houses, he clearly understood in a document you've delivered, he clearly understood in his own handwriting what the tactic was.
No,
I'm sorry, but I'm going to ask you a different question.